In May of his 30th year, Charles Wesley contracted pleurisy. Charles Wesley, he got it. And in case you are not up on what pleurisy is, that means fever, chills, dry coughs, chest pains when breathing. Let me just repeat that: chest pains when breathing, shortness of breath as a result, rapid heart rates, swollen and aching joints. Think how awful you'd feel if you had pleurisy today. Now imagine how awful you'd feel if you had pleurisy 300 years ago. Add to a debilitating, scary illness, an illness that would make anyone all too mindful of the brevity of life. Add to such an illness the fact that Charles had been struggling with doubts about his faith. Imagine the misery, and tell me honestly now, if any set of circumstances could have made you or me less likely to think about writing a hymn. Of course, friends came to visit Charles in his illness. They gave him basic care. They talked with him about their own faith struggles. When there was no one to talk with, Charles read his Bible. Eventually, he found himself reconciled and at peace with God. His words, I swear, from his journal. I'm not making them up. And he did indeed write a hymn about it all. He sang it a few days later with his brother John. It just wasn't "Oh for a Thousand Tongues to Sing." It was another hymn. "Oh for a Thousand Tongues to Sing" came a year later, all 18 verses of it in 1739. 17 of them are in your hymn book on the next page. What we today call "Oh for a Thousand Tongues to Sing," Charles called "For the Anniversary Day of One's Conversion." The hymn was first published in 1740. Because the verse we know as the first verse doesn't appear until seven verses down in the original hymn, we tend to ignore those earlier verses. And that's really too bad, I think, because those verses have a great deal to say, and they say it beautifully about Charles's personal, and personal is an important aspect of the whole story, his personal experience of conversion. When John, his brother, eventually, 40 years later, in 1780, in this delicious little box here, in 1780, published a collection of hymns for the people called Methodists, and it looked just like this because that's what this is. The very first section of this hymn book, entitled "Exhorting Sinners," in that section, the very first hymn was Charles's "For the Anniversary Day of One's Conversion." And it began, as it does today, with verse 7. "Oh, for a thousand tongues to sing my dear Redeemer's praise." Somehow that got changed to "great" over the years, but it's "my dear Redeemer's praise." In this 1780 hymnal, John omitted, of course, the first six verses of Charles's original hymn. And he also omitted verses 15 and 16, those delicious verses about harlots and publicans and thieves and murderers and all you hellish crew, sons of lust and pride. And I really do think that's a shame as well, because those were obviously the worst people Charles could think of at the time. And yet, he considered his own sins worse than theirs. "Saved is the sinner that believes from crimes as great as mine." Ponder what Charles Wesley's crimes might have been. Here maybe is one. A verse that John did keep in this hymnal, and is still here, and that you'll rarely find today anywhere, is the penultimate verse in Charles's poem. And it goes like this: "Awake from guilty nature's sleep, and Christ shall give you light. Cast all your sins into the deep, and wash the Ethiop white." Now, having put that thought in your head, let's talk for a moment about tunes. Because although musicians come to church regularly, what they really want to do is critique sermons. Right? Okay. So today I have the odious task of... odious, that's not the word I'm looking for. Onerous. Today, I have the onerous task of saying a word or two about music. In the U.S., the tune that we use for "Oh, for a Thousand Tongues to Sing" is "Asmon." We just did it. And it's pretty much the only tune we associate with the text. To us, it seems a perfect fit for the words. But in England, Lingam is the tune of choice. And the choir, and they're still here, by the time we get there, is going to sing that tune for the offertory. But you could sing those words to any tune that fits the meter. You could, for example, sing them to New Britain, which is the tune that we use for Amazing Grace, if you wanted to, if you were of a mind to, if I could twist your arm into singing. Amazing Grace, you know how that goes, right, Hal? Amazing Grace. So, oh, for a thousand tongues to sing my dear Redeemer's praise. Okay, cool. Now, I would like for you to go down to that verse that has never until this moment, until somebody asked me to talk about this hymn, troubled my mind, because I have no idea what it is. Go down to the verse that begins, "He breaks the power." Do you have that right there before you? Don't worry about it. It goes, "He breaks the power of canceled sin." What does that mean? Do you have any idea? From years of working with the choir, I can tell you that people mostly don't know what they're singing when they sing. So one thing that singing a hymn to a different tune does for you is it gives you a chance to think about the words. So there's a lot of things to think about in O For a Thousand Tongues to Sing, and I will leave you now.